Oh, what is this? Do I want to restart my computer? No. Please, no. I don't know. Okay, let's wait. Okay, great. Phew. Okay, first of all, I'd like to acknowledge Jeff Johnson, Jennifer Nelson, Michelle Ginsburg, and Nick Vent for their work on this project as well. And I have no relationships to disclose. Okay, as introduction, public health traditionally receives reports of diseases and outbreaks that are mandatory reportable, and that's more of a passive method of receiving information from the community, what's going on. And the goal of syndromic surveillance is to allow for a more active surveillance of identification of cases and outbreaks, including bioterrorism, instead of waiting for them to be reported, since earlier detection can lead to better prevention and control for these cases. And hazardous toxic releases are reportable, and they must be cleaned up properly. Hazardous toxic events also are sometimes underreported, just like other reportable conditions. You know, we don't know which ones haven't been reported at times with the infectious conditions, but in this case, we did find that our syndromic surveillance system was able to identify specific hazardous toxic cases and events that hadn't been reported. So those are the ones I'm going to be talking about this morning. The agencies involved are Public Health Services, Community Epidemiology Branch, and the Division of Environmental Health Hazardous Materials Division, or HAZMAT. Okay, so San Diego County, we perform emergency department syndromic surveillance, which consists of electronic data from 8 hospitals the chief complaints are daily reviewed, grouped into syndrome categories, including hazardous toxic. And these data come electronically through a secure website that we use for the county that we download from our server. So we apply SAS-based algorithms to detect statistical aberrations and to compare the daily counts to a prior 30-day mean. In addition, we use a keyword data mining feature, which enables us to identify specific cases that have chief complaints of interest. These generate a line list of patients, and those are reviewed daily. Community Epidemiology Branch follows up on any possible clusters, and we notify HAZMAT for those that appear to be related to a similar exposure. This is a list of some of the keywords that we have in our hazardous toxic category. They include chemical warfare agents, household chemicals, and radiation, such as dirty bomb. The emergency department visits with any of these terms or derivatives in their chief complaint are grouped into the hazardous toxic category. And then, as I said, this statistical analysis and also the keyword search generates a list of any cases that have these chief complaints or parts of these as their chief complaint. The cases that were reviewed this morning are unreported hazardous toxic events that were identified by Community Epidemiology Branch, including a chlorine gas release in October 2006, a radiation exposure in May of 07, a toxic fume exposure through a ventilation system in July of 07, and formaldehyde exposure event. Okay, the chlorine gas release was identified when 2 emergency department visits had exposure chief complaints with a discharge diagnosis of respiratory irritation from chlorine gas on 10-10-06. These 2 cases came in around the same time to the emergency department, about 8:30. They're both discharged, and they arrived by their own means, not by ambulance. So We contacted the hospital for more information and also just gave a call to hazmat, and they were not aware of anything that could have been related to this, that they hadn't had any reports of any chlorine gas release, so they were definitely interested in this. Upon follow-up, we found that the cases were, in fact, city wastewater workers, and they had been working on a valve that had inadvertently opened and released chlorine gas, and as they worked on the valve to close it, they were exposed for 5 minutes, approximately, and both experienced acute respiratory distress, cough, headache, vomiting, and they took themselves to the emergency department. And we found that because the self-transport situation, they actually were trying to not let anybody know about their situation. I think, I'm not sure if they were at fault or not, but they didn't tell their employer that they were going to the hospital. They just went, and then because they weren't transported by EMS, the hazmat division wasn't aware of it. They were able to look at EMS data, but they did not know about this case. And after about a week later, when they did follow up, the city actually was fined for failure to report in a reasonable time frame, about $12,000. So, excuse me. So they were supposed to report that one, and then they didn't. Okay, so we had a radiation exposure case in May 2007. We had in our HazTox category one visit to an emergency department for radiation exposure. Just calling the hospital and hazmat, we were waiting for information. The hazmat was not aware of any radiation exposures. So as we learned from our follow-up from the hospital, the patient was asymptomatic but had been taken there by their security officer after they had violated a protocol in which they entered a high radiation area in the place where they worked, where they radiate medical equipment to sterilize it, and there had been a jam in the conveyor belt, and the employee just went down and kind of unjammed this problem area without turning off the system and without putting any protection on, and so they were exposed, and they wanted them to be evaluated, so they did some tests, and they didn't have any organ failures or anything. All the blood tests and everything was normal, but just to be sure of what kind of a radiation exposure, after we were able to talk to the hazmat division, they sent their physicist to perform a site visit and measure the area to see how much radiation had occurred just to the person. And they found that there was no violation there. The patient or the person had just breached the protocol, and it was a case event that happened to be a single case, and there's no ongoing threat. So, in fact, they had reported to the state radiation management agency, but they hadn't reported to the local hazmat. So that's why they were unaware of it when I had contacted them. So eventually we would have found out about it, but at the time, you know, the next day when I called hazmat, they were not aware of this case. So, okay, an inhalational injury cluster in July 2007 started. We were aware of this when we found three inhalational injury chief complaints in our emergency department data clustered around the same time, and they all walked in and were discharged. So when we contacted the hospital and hazmat, we found out that, well, hazmat was unaware of it, and we obtained more information from the hospital. We found out that these were all, in fact, hospital employees who'd been seen in their own emergency department after being exposed to noxious fumes through a ventilation system for about 10 minutes. These employees work in an office across the hall from where there was some construction going on. They had symptoms of cough and dizziness. The hospital safety officer assessed the situation and found that after putting on a filter, HEPA filter, in the ventilation system, the air was clean in 30 minutes. and the construction that has been occurring and had been occurring in the pharmacy actually caused the fumes. When the paint thinner, they used paint thinner on the floor to remove some adhesives from a tile floor that was being stripped. The contractor was fired, and that was cleaned up. The hazmat division did do a site inspection after learning about this to determine if it was safe, and they found that it was, and that the permissible exposure limits had not from OSHA did not exceed the standards. There was no violation here because the hospital safety officer had assessed the situation immediately and discovered the source, measured levels of exposure to be within the limits, and then it was properly cleaned up, so that was good. Okay, lastly, we had a chemical exposure cluster identified in November of 2007 when we had a high count of patients seen for chemical exposure in our emergency, in a single emergency department. We contacted the hospital to get more information, and also we asked HAZMAT if they knew of anything that could have caused a common exposure to chemicals, and they did not know of anything. So upon follow-up, we found that the nurse faxed the histories, and we found that the patients were commonly exposed to formaldehyde for 30 minutes when they were performing a PET surgery in a hospital, PET hospital, where a bottle had broken on the floor, and they continued doing the surgery, and then later started having symptoms of eye irritation, shortness of breath, headache, dizziness, and asthma attack for one person. So the patients were seen in two different hospitals. The fire department did come to the scene to inspect and to clean up, and they determined that it was cleaned up. Yet when HAZMAT did a site visit, they found that it was insufficiently cleaned up, and they did have to neutralize the spill with ammonia, and it cost approximately $2,000 for that. That was charged to the facility. And since they didn't report the human illnesses, they did actually call to report the release of formaldehyde, but they hadn't mentioned, they failed to mention that there was any human exposures or illnesses. So that is an OSHA violation. It's unclear whether OSHA followed through to make them pay for anything, pay for the violation, but that is something they should do. Excuse me. So in conclusion, our surveillance system utilizing emergency department data successfully identified real hazardous toxic events unknown to HAZMAT. And we had successful collaboration between different agencies, including public health, hospitals, and the HAZMAT division. And these events were identified within hours of occurrence, which gave us time to respond if it was going to be an ongoing public health threat. In addition, the hazardous toxic surveillance in our emergency department is a good backup if HAZMAT is not notified. And we realized, too, that in all these cases, the patients had been transported either by their own car or someone else's car, not by EMS. So we found that that's sort of a gap in our information, since HAZMAT has access to EMS transport data. This can be an important catch for those that just walk into the emergency department. And also, our surveillance led to increased situational awareness, site inspections, and public safety, and the core public health function of identification and response to potential public health threats was enhanced. And although none of these events were related to intentional releases, we have validated that our system is useful for capturing potential bioterrorism or hazardous toxic cases and clusters. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes.
Yes, I wonder, does this operation work 24/7? Suppose you had an incident that occurred at midnight, a report to the hospital occurred at 1:30 in the morning. How soon after that do you know about it, or is someone there to monitor that situation?
The question is, how soon would we be alerted of this using our system, since some cases may occur in the emergency department after midnight or at an odd hour? And do we do it real time? In fact, we don't have real time data in the fact that it, in the sense that it's an ongoing analysis. We look at the last 24 hours. So in the morning around 7, we download the data from the prior day, calendar, you know, day, 24-hour day. So we have that gap in information. Hopefully, you know, if something happened early hours, and then, you know, potentially it could be over 24 hours that we do learn of it through this system. I guess, yeah, that's definitely a limitation. We don't have that capability of ongoing analysis of the data. Yes, there's two questions went behind. Okay, go ahead. Okay, the question is about collecting specimens from patients to identify the source of the chemical or the type of chemical. Okay. Oh, is that part of the protocol? That's a good question. I don't really know. I think that if patients go to a hospital, then they're going to try and establish what they were exposed to, what they're dealing with, and they would just do some testing there. I think public health could be an assistance if there's a mystery to solve, but I think typically they knew, in all these cases, they knew what they'd been exposed to, roughly. The one inhalational injury, they knew that they were exposed to the fumes, and then they found out what the fumes were because they were on site. So I'm not aware of what particular blood tests they might do or what kind of specimens they might want. But in a case of bioterrorism where we don't know, we do have ways of finding out. There's environmental sampling that they can do to determine. I think they would probably go to the environment as opposed to the patients, possibly. Depends on the situation. They would have symptoms, and they would know more information, just depending on the situation, what the symptoms were. Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. They found the source, so I guess they would look for the source. Mm-hmm. I believe there are tests, yeah. Okay. They would know. Okay. Thank you very much.
Excuse me. Uh-huh. I think we should end this question. We can come back later for time reasons. Victor, you like to do? I apologize for coming in late. I'm the moderator.
Okay, thank you.
We'll go to the next speaker or presenter. It's Dr. K. Lovelace.